The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the show on the defense. Joining us again is Nick Mehta. Nick, how you doing?
Doing fantastic. Definitely getting that win against the Cowboys just makes you feel a lot better about where this team is going. And I think in general, it was a very stabilizing win on both sides of the ball. Certainly some things to clean up on both sides of the ball, but I think overall, you start to get a feel of, I don't want to say what this team could be long term, because the offensive game plan, I don't think is what they're envisioning long term. But you start to get an idea of how this version of the Ravens is going to beat other teams.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. A lot of good points in that first show we did. A lot of great points that are new to Nick, and a lot of back and forth that I think you folks will like. So make sure you go back and give that episode a try. For one thing, we talked extensively about the use of the dime defense. In a lot of ways, some of the greatest Ravens teams of all, the 2000 and 2019 team in particular, used a lot of dimes. And Nick made the point about the Ravens have always had a stable of dimes ready to go. It's really an Ozzie Newsome thing, is that he always were able to get dimes very cheap over the years, has an incredible record of getting them players like Chad Williams and Corey Harris and others from the earlier Ravens years that were very good, for example. But there was also, we talked about the not converting turnovers. We talked about some of the ways pass defense was different, some of the adjustments that were made in game in this one. And, you know, whether or not we're really more frustrated with some of the things that happened in the fourth quarter, or more in aggregate happy about the win in general. So I'll let you go back and explore that. This part of the episode, we're going to start off with the pass rush to talk about that first, and then we'll get to some individual discussions and the mailbag at the end. But Ravens got some solid pressure on Prescott in this game, especially when you consider that in quarter four, they were very gassed. And they had 22, okay, they played 24 of 27 consecutive snaps. The defense was on the field. So they had 6-play drive, onside kick, 7-play drive, and then 11-play drive or something like that. And they had 24 out of 27 plays consecutively on the field. Takes an immense toll on your pass rush to have that happen.
Yeah, and I think we saw that as the game went on. We talked at the top of the last episode about adding Yannick Ngakoue. We talked a little bit about Brent Urban not being on the field and some of those contributions to the defensive line, as well as using dime as much. You're not throwing as many off-ball blitzes on, and so it's really relying on those front four to get pressure. That has pluses and minuses. I think the big plus is that we're seeing a Ravens front four that can get pressure with a much more consistent rate than we've seen in years past. We've seen, I think, and not using a crazy amount of stunts, not using a crazy amount of line games. I just think there have been some substantial improvements to individual pass rushing ability over the last two seasons. I think a good chunk of that credit goes to Chuck Smith, the outside linebackers and pass rush specialist, a defensive coach that they have, a former all-pro pass rusher himself. He has done a phenomenal job, I think, especially with Odafe Owe, and even expanding Kyle Van-Noy's repertoire, really getting the most out of him since he's come here, as well as on the interior. Having three interior pass rushing threats is not something many teams can say. And I know when Michael Pierce came back, a lot of people thought it was going to be a lot of, you know, nose tackle run stopping on early downs, but that's forgetting how good a pass rusher he was during his first stint in Baltimore. And he's also done an excellent job with that.
Yeah, excellent, excellent pressure guy. He's a contributory pass rusher. This is rare. It's rare that he's going to be the guy that actually wraps up the quarterback, but it's a hell of a often that he will create the lack of pocket space, what I call phone boothing the pocket, so that somebody else can finish the job. And same we're seeing from Travis Jones as well, though he's probably got a little bit more pass rushing juice than Pierce does. He's still a guy who he's going to help somebody else get the sack more often than not. Let me jump in and talk about the overall pressure rate, ample time and space. Prescott had 17 times in this game. That's 31%. That's a little above average. What was more disappointing is the Ravens allowed 9.4 yards per play on those plays. And they did have one sack. That was the one where Prescott lost a handle on a football. It ended up being ruled, I believe, a team sack. Didn't go on any individuals total, although they don't have a team total anywhere within the game book, but I'm 99% sure that's how it was recorded. And then ball was out quick 16 times. And this is over a large sample size. You're talking about 54 dropbacks that this occurred on. And that led to 134 yards and 8.4 yards per play. That's very bad. Very bad to give up 8.4 yards per play on ball out quick throws. But it was a lot of slants in particular that were somewhat effective during this game. There was some yak given up on those, as opposed to some other plays where there wasn't a lot of yak given up. And then their pressures 21 times, 39%, 67 yards, 3.2 yards per play. That's about average, but this is a case where Prescott exceeded his expected yards by about 45 in this game.
Yeah, I think with Prescott is one of those QBs, like I said in the first episode, cerebral, very good at diagnosing blitzes, coverages, pre-snap. Really, I mean, I enjoy watching him play quarterback because he tends to not get frazzled. He pushes a lot of tight window throws. In fact, that was a stat that I had pop up. He had a 35.3% tight window rate per Next Gen Stats, his highest since week 4 of 2018, which I think was very intentional by the Ravens to play into his aggressiveness because it wasn't a very successful aggressiveness. I don't have the exact statistic. Sorry, he completed 5 of just 18 of those pass attempts into tight windows. And so, you know, it was their underneath game, their quick passing game that they really started to figure out they needed to rely on as the Ravens were jamming the receivers at the line of scrimmage and tending to play a little bit more downfield coverages, safeties over the top. The adjustment that the Cowboys made was smart to start hitting a lot of these underneath routes, start hitting guys out of the backfield and letting them pick up yak. And that, to me, is where a lot of those yards came from when the ball was out quick, was just getting the ball out in positions in the flats where linebackers couldn't get there and the cornerbacks were occupied with receivers taking them downfield.
I was happy with the way the Ravens adjusted. We went into this in the first episode. We don't need to cover that ground again. So let me move on to the numbers, because I want to come back to the stunts in particular, but I'll do that last. For the numbers of pass rushers, they rushed almost exclusively 4 or 5. One time for 3, gave up a 31-yard play at the end of the half. We already talked about that. That was the one Wiggins kind of overran the play. Lamb caught on the sideline, set up the Cowboys field goal to end the half. The other was 2 6-man rushes they had, on which were both of those passes went incomplete. So those three plays aside, they rushed the quarterback 51 other times, 38 times with 4, and they gave up 5.7 yards per play, and 13 times with 5, and they give up 8.8 yards per play. Once again, we're seeing that the 4-man pass rush is the bread and butter of this team. Now, what's different about the 4-man pass rush with Orr, as opposed to Martindale for sure, but McDonald also, is McDonald had somewhat more of a mix of zone blitzes in there, where you would see guys rushing from the slot. They got 6 sacks from the slot corner last year, which is incredible. And they got sacks from outside. We're still seeing some of that with the war, but we see less of dropping interior linemen to cover to fund that effectively.
Yeah, it's something I like to say. I think that pound for pound, that slot blitz play call last year was the most effective defensive play call in football. Even late in the year, when it had been on tape so many times, part of that was the timing of the defense. Arthur Maulet did a really great job timing up those slot blitzes. And it was something I've noticed as well that Orr has gone away from. I think part of that is your guy's injured. Maulet has been injured to start the year. And so it is the type of higher risk play that if you don't have a guy timing the snap right, it's easy to pick him up and knock him off his rushing path, and then you don't have numbers downfield, which, as you just pointed out with your statistics, is something the Ravens have struggled with. So I'm curious to see if Orr works that more in with when Mollett does come back, if that's more of a personnel-related thing or if that's really more of a scheme change that he's going for.
Let's talk about Mollett for a second. I know we're talking about the pass rush here, but I really get the sense that he has been Wally Pipped out of this lineup right now. If you don't know what I mean, because that's really an old-timey reference, Wally Pipp was the first baseman replaced by Lou Gehrig, who then went on to play 2,130 consecutive games.
Yeah, don't worry. I got that one. And I'm less sure about that because of how good he looked throughout the offseason and how well he played last year. I think that if he comes, I think they're going to give him, I think, ample time to come back fully healthy and not rush anything coming off the surgery. I still think he's going to break back into this lineup. I think that especially if, you know, Orr does want to get a little bit more aggressive with slot blitzes. And I do think that Mollett is, I think he is still a very underrated slot corner. So I think I'd be a little surprised, Matt, since you mentioned that, I'm curious to see now if he's able to make his way back into this lineup, because you know you have Humphrey, you know you have Stevens, you want Williams and Hamilton on the field. Then after that, Wiggins has had his issues. He had a rough game this week. Ardarius is kind of ascending. Jackson, it doesn't seem to be hitting what you expected from him. So I think between Wiggins, Jackson, Washington, and Mollett, when he comes back, it's going to be interesting to see how Orr sorts that out.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, but I think Ardarius Washington has made the question maybe not academic yet, but I don't know how you keep him off the field right now. I think he's earned the right to fail at this point at the position. I don't think the position is his temporarily. I think it's his until he fails.
Yeah, and I wonder if, as we said on the last show, if they choose to move him back to some more traditional split safety looks. And you know, it's a question of how comfortable he is in that role versus playing in a more physical nature in the nickel. But that would open up a spot for Mollett to slide back on the field. And, you know, again, I think it's good to have these different options, because one of the trademarks of McDonald was being willing to shelve certain things for a week because of the matchup that you had. And I think I honestly think Orr could look at some matchups and decide to play different guys certain ways that way as well.
So that certainly could happen. And the thing that the 10,000 pound elephant in this room that should be taking up 98% of the ring is that injuries will dictate their strategy. So they'll be forced into doing whatever they do. And if Eddie Jackson gets hurt, that obviously means they've got to rotate the pieces in this parking lot puzzle to make them all fit. Anyway, wanted to get back to the pass rush a little bit and talk a little bit about the deceptive elements, because this is something that Orr has done a little bit less of than McDonald has, way less than Martindale has, who he used off-ball blitzes, you know, as party favors. 8 off-ball blitzes in this game, 0.15 per play. They were reasonably effective, 5.8 yards per play on those throws. Dallas had 6.7 overall. I'm not saying that's a statistically significant difference. That's just a very low number of blitzes per snap. Last week, it was exclusively Hamilton and Simpson that were doing the blitzing. This week, it was a wider variety of players who were actually doing it. We had some from Hamilton. We had some from Humphrey two times. Yeah, got one quarterback hit 2 times. And we had others as well. But I think the blitzes are more effective, first of all, when you have more different players who might do it.
Yeah. So one thing with the Ravens coming into this week was their lack of pressures on, I'm looking for the statistic right now, their lack of pressures on blitzes. So when they were calling blitzes, they just weren't getting pressure super efficiently.
Important definitional point here. Blitzes, as almost everybody else defines it, are 5-plus man rushes. Okay, so almost anywhere you'll see a comment made about blitzes, that's what I mean. I'm specific. I mean off-ball blitzes. So these are guys brought as pass rushers who are at least a yard and a half off the line of scrimmage at the snap or further in than the slot receiver. Okay, so it's my definition of it is very different, and I've never been a guy who shied away from different definitions than everybody else. But I have the pass rushing by numbers is done separately, and the point you're making is still very valid with regard to that. It's just when I'm talking about off ball blitzes, I mean something different.
Yeah, and I think that's a helpful clarification, and kind of leads into the thing that's really important with this, which is they haven't generated free rushers. McDonald was really good at generating free rushers. This year, the Ravens have just, going into week three, I mean, they had just one unblocked sack and just five unblocked pressures on the year.
That's actually good, isn't it? That means they're getting home with having to beat people.
So that's a good note for their four-man pass rush, which has been really effective. But when they have called blitzes, they have struggled to generate free rushers. And they have largely relied on winning one-on-one matchups to try and get home. And it is one of the reasons why they tend to get pressure a little bit later than some teams do. They don't get a ton of really quick pressures that some teams are able to get because they have to win an O-line one-on-one matchup before getting to the quarterback instead of generating a lot of free rushers, which is something that Mike McDonald did really well last year. He had some plays where Patrick Queen would come crashing into linemen to clear space for a looping edge rusher. He had a lot of very creative designs. And I think Orr has stepped away from that a little bit this year. We haven't seen as many crazy loops, crazy stunts. We haven't seen big linemen dropping into coverage, which I think is a liability. So there's pluses and minuses to it. I think it's a little bit more, it feels weird to say this about Zach Orr, but compared to McDonald, it's a little bit more of a conservative approach when it comes to the pass rush and blitzing. But like we've been hammering, that is not necessarily a bad thing when you have a four-man pass rush that is able to get home with the frequency that the Ravens have this year.
This would be a show I'd love to do at some point in the future, is talking about the Ravens defensive coordinators in history and giving them a 0 to 10 or a 1 to 10 score in terms of various components of defense and what they like to do. But if you talk about the willingness to expend resources rushing the passer, Martindale and Ryan are at the top, and Ryan's probably a 10 and Martindale a 9, even though Martindale's more recent. He seems like an all-out blitzer to us completely. You go back to the Rex Ryan days, he was a madman. And if you look at other things like the dime defense and whatnot, or just wanting to have more defensive backs on the field, there's some coordinators who've been extremely malleable in that way. Marvin Lewis, for example, it was whoever he had on the team that was going to decide, but he generally did like to have heavy defensive back packages. The Ravens had then a whole spate of guys that they didn't really appreciate that. Dean Pease was not a multiple defensive back defensive coordinator, for example, but that'd be a fun show to do sometime.
Yeah, and the other thing you mentioned about blitzes, you mentioned that Humphrey blitzed a couple times, and that's a nice change up because his blitz rate has really dropped in the last couple of years. He hasn't blitzed heavily since really 2020, but he's still a very effective blitzer. He's still like smart guy, knows the angles to take. I think that Dallas's use of spread was also a factor in Orr's, I don't want to keep saying conservative, but just lack of aggressive blitzing. He, especially with the off-ball blitzes that you talk about, the amount of spread that the Cowboys run, one, you're already setting up one-on-one matchups that you feel comfortable with. And two, because they're in spread, you need to have more resources dedicated to coverage downfield. You need to have guys split out into the slot. And so it's harder to obviously blitz against spread because it's a lot easier to get the ball out quick, pick up yards after the catch. So I think that's also just a little game plan thing that you saw in this game. There wasn't the need or the right situation from the Cowboys to really send very aggressive blitzes. And I think that one of the things about Orr that was talked about a lot this offseason was he's a former player, he's a player's coach, he's aggressive, he's a former linebacker, and his willingness to take off Trenton Simpson off the field in the first episode, his willingness to go away from what might be his more emotional desire to tap into, his playing days as a blitzer, he is willingly going away from that for what is the long-term benefit to the defense. And that to me is in and of itself a very encouraging sign from a first-year head coach or defensive coordinator.
I'm going to get back to the elements of deception, but let me just address that for a second. Would you be more happy at this exact moment in time if that were Orr's decision to go to more dime in this game, or if Harbaugh came to him and said, hey, look, Zach, we need more six defensive back situations on the field. We need more dime. We need more. Would you be happier if Harbaugh had mandated it and Orr was going along, or if Orr thought of himself and was making the adaptations? One is clearly better for me.
Yeah, I definitely prefer Orr coming up with himself and making the adaptation. It's weird because there are times where I wish Harbaugh would go to Monken on the offensive side of the ball and maybe nudge him in one direction or the other. But to me, it's not a situation where I would want Harbaugh coming to. I mean, obviously, if that hit happened or makes the adjustment, that is still a net positive. But or ideally coming up with it on his own says a lot more about his malleability as a coach and his willingness to, you know, look at the modern game. He still, he played at kind of the beginning of this giant passing boom that we've seen, and he's coached through a lot of it. And even with all the excitement about Roquan and Trenton in the middle of this season, his willingness to really step back and take the big picture view of the whole defense and not as a former linebacker, to me, is, I don't know if I was super worried about that coming in, but it's very encouraging to see his malleability.
Okay. So I'm completely with you on which side is the better side, that it should be Orr doing it. I'll just say this really points to some of the criticism of Harbaugh being not particularly useful, is that if he really has to go, if you don't really want him going to Orr and telling, look, we got to change this. The one time I remember Harbaugh being recorded as saying we've got to do something different was after the first half at New England in the 2012 AFC Championship game. He said, we got to open it up in the second half over the headset to the offensive coordinator. And I guess it was Caldwell at the time. And then they did. They went to the shotgun, and New England had no answer for it that second half. I give them both credit for that, by the way. I don't even mind that Harbaugh is the guy who made it happen. It's just that, you know, if in the whole criticizing Harbaugh stuff that we seem to be so, the Twitter is so addicted to right now. It's just this piling on mentality that goes on about it. Think about some of the things he has been able to do. I you know, what we heard this week, you know, he's working with the offensive line to really watch their play in practice is, to me, a very positive element.
Yeah, and I know this is a defensive podcast, but I just can't let this go by without shouting out Daniel Falele for just a much improved performance. I think that the concerns for him in this game were coming against stunts. And he successfully defended multiple stunts. He wasn't perfect, allowed a couple pressures here and there. But I think that's an example of the team really critically looking at something and figuring out a way to address it. I don't know exactly what they did in the castle this week, or where they just sat him down Clockwork Orange style and had him stare at Dallas's stunts on tape, but it worked.
That's a good reference. There'll be 39% of my listeners will get that, maybe more. The 52-year-old movie there he's referring to. But anyway, it's a good one. Let me get back to the elements of deception. The second one I want to talk is about is simulated pressures. Now, they had six times where they dropped two from the line of scrimmage, and pretty much Prescott picked that apart. I go back to some of your comments and obviously my feelings about Prescott in general being able to look at things, about veteran quarterbacks. I think you really gain less from simulated pressure against the quarterback who's able to get rid of the ball quickly. You definitely, it's kind of like asking a running back to chip block and then expecting some of them as a receiver as well. When you ask a inside linebacker to be up in the A gap and show blitz, and then he has to drop even into a zone to cover, even into a short zone to cover, you are hampering his effectiveness.
Yeah, the guy who can do that, and I felt like did a couple times, is Kyle Hamilton, who's able to drop off the line of scrimmage and get back into these zones just because of his movement abilities. But when you're doing with that with linebackers, agreed, it's a lot harder. And the Ravens' success on simulated blitzes last year, a lot of that came against just inexperienced young rookie quarterbacks that just have not seen this kind of stuff before, and you're able to surprise them with it. Whereas with Prescott, he knew of some sense what was coming. He was looking for certain cues of who was dropping off the line of scrimmage. And I think that the advantage that you get of kind of creating a little bit more confusion at the line of scrimmage is just nullified by a quarterback who knows how to use space the way that Prescott does. There are probably certain veteran quarterbacks that you can push that more aggressively against. But to me, Prescott is not one of them.
And you, the other benefit you're getting is with the offensive line. So if you have a quarterback who is used to, you know, like late career Manning, late career Brady, making two quick fakes, then getting rid of the ball all within about 2 seconds or less, it's really not going to help you that much. And his offensive line play almost doesn't matter over that short a window. What does matter is if the quarterback's going to try and beat you deep or beat you on any longer developing route, you know, you have the ability to fool the offensive line with simulated pressure, and you may get them to make a mistake. But I just, I've remembered too many times in Ravens history that are significant, including the big one being the final devastating play of 2017, where they tried to show simulated pressure and didn't make it work. They asked the defender to do too much. Mosley was asked to, after showing blitz, to drag Boyd down the seam on a route that created a fairly easy pitch and catch throw, frankly, for Dalton at the time.
Yeah, and this also gets back to what I was saying about free rushers with simulated pressures. One of the value of simulated pressures, like you said, is tricking the offensive line. You do your homework on this Dallas offensive line. They allow just a 2.5% unblock pressure rate. They are really good at sifting through the traffic and not letting free rushers get loose. And so when you're using simulated pressure to try and generate a free rusher against a line like this, you're kind of putting yourself at a disadvantage. I don't think you're necessarily playing into what they want you to do, but you're certainly putting yourself at a covered disadvantage.
Yeah. All right, third defensive element of deception that I really want to talk about is stunts, because that's what's been really effective for this Ravens team this year, and they've used them very sparingly. 9 stunts in this game, 8 singles, 1 double, nine plays with a stunt, 14 total yards on this play, so 1.6 yards per play. Complete outlier to the rest of the statistical numbers. And you're starting to get to some significance there with that number. Then you look back to last week, and they were effective at it. I think this is a team which generates color well in the face of the opposing quarterback. And I think some of it is psychological to the quarterback, and some of it is they've got really quick players who can follow the butt of the pick player very quickly and get pressure. I really love stunting, but more than that, I really love the players calling their own stunts on field. And I think Orr has limited that. Now, you're not allowed to do it when there's a blitz. That's like the cardinal rule of defense, is you can't stunt if there's a blitz called on the play. But otherwise, the players have agency to call their own blitzes on the field. And you know, the numbers, though, the last couple of weeks are telling me they don't have that agency under Orr's system. So they're trying to develop, you know, as Brady called it on the broadcast, funnel rushes, where they keep a quarterback, tied to a spot in the pocket, make him less comfortable with where he is in the pocket by continuing to apply the Star Wars trash compactor to him, as opposed to getting after him with a looping rush, or even the advantage that's gained by an underneath player who gets half a block from two different positions.
Yeah, and again, this is an adjustment that Orr is going to have to continue to make against different quarterbacks, because Prescott is not the kind of quarterback that is especially bothered by a constricted pocket. He's pretty comfortable moving in the pocket. He's comfortable throwing off platform, can move when he needs to. And I think more of those stunts would have just helped get in his face quicker with pressure up the middle. I think with Travis Jones playing as well as he is, I think we'll start to see some more double teams of him just for his pure power and ability to throw guys around in the trenches. And I'm hoping that's when Orr starts to open up a few more, either give some of that leverage back to players to call stunts or start calling them a bit more on his own, because Jones can just be a real weapon on stunts just to clear space for guys like Owe looping inside.
Yeah, the agency is an important thing, because the players can see things on field that Orr, as a sideline coordinator, doesn't have access to.
Right.
I mean, they can come to him on the sideline. They can say, hey, look, we could beat this guard. I just got to get on his left shoulder. I got to do blah, 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 blah. You can go and have that conversation with Zach Orr. But in part, I'm not sure how much time he's got for that, particularly if a couple different individual players are coming to him about a couple of different things. It wouldn't be an easy, you know, transition to do that. I think you got to build a culture where they're empowered to call these things on field. And great players, it's easy to do. And the Ravens interior rushers and the Ravens exterior guys, who are now all veterans, I really trust to do it.
Yeah. And I think that Orr is, again, it's a little bit conservative. It's a little bit of a conservative feel. He's getting his footing. I think the first 3 games with McDonald, there were plenty of gaffes and mishaps and things that he learned and picked up. So I think, again, I'm a big defensive guy. I'm really excited to see how this defense evolves and see how Orr changes, his philosophy and adapts to different situations throughout the season. And I think looking at this game, you know, you also hope he looks at the statistics from this game and however they chart things, they look at the effectiveness of their stunts and say, okay, we need to do more of that. We need to leverage this talent advantage that we have on the interior of our line against a lot of interior lines that they'll play this season and just let them get more aggressive. Not even more aggressive. Let them get more free and kind of play off of each other in a way that was just so devastating last year.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Talk about some individual performances in this game. I know we've got a lot to talk about. Why don't you start us off with the player of your choice?
I have been screaming he's playing with one eye for 2 weeks now, because he's not literally playing with one eye, but Kyle VeaNor had a fractured orbital. I'm lucky enough to have never experienced that. If anyone's out there listening with a fractured orbital, I can't imagine how much that must have hurt. But then lining up to play outside linebacker, I don't have his snap count in front of me, but for however many snaps he played the last 2 weeks, which was quite a few, and to be as devastatingly effective as he has. And I mentioned some of their lack of quick pressure. Van Noy's got some quick pressure around the edge. A really effective dip move from him. And I think that from him is such a emotionally, viscerally satisfying thing that the defense can rally around. They seem to really rally around him on the field. He seems to have really embraced a role as a veteran leader, even though he's only been here for 2 years. I just couldn't be more impressed with that performance. Even if he didn't have the fractured orbital, we'd still be talking about it.
He had parts of 8 pressure events as I scored in this game. So he had the 2 sacks, and nobody's going to disagree on how they score them. I have him for 4.5 pressures, so 4 full, 1.5, and 1 the pass defense at the line of scrimmage. So even on a play where he was held up, he elevated against Steele and knocked the pass down. Could have even been an intercepted ball if he'd gotten very fortunate there. But he led the Ravens by a mile. Nnamdi Matabike had 5. And then after that, I think the next highest had 3. That might have been Pierce. So, very impressive game. The thing that's impressed me that I did not know he had is, and this may be a Chuck Smith thing, because now it seems like a lot of Ravens have a great spin move, but Van Noy is devastating. It's devastating. Almost always uses it to the inside. You don't have to. You can use it a spin move to the outside because it's a misdirection move, the half man move, as they call it. And then you're exploiting to how do you counter to go to the other side. It's an absolutely devastating thing. He likes to get that tackle in a little bit of space where he's not going to have help from the guard or it's going to be too late. And he can spin usually to the inside to make that move. Love seeing it.
Yeah. And I think that,
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. see home club for details.
Saw a stat that he has 13 sacks over his first 17 games as a Raven, seeing that consistency from last year. And we just pointed out, building into even more this year after getting a full offseason with Chuck Smith, who I just, again, have to shout out because that spin move is just so tight. And you can tell that Chuck Smith has really firmed up the technique and the timing of how they're supposed to attack these offensive tackles. Van Noy being able to do this while playing, and I have in front of me now 40 snaps on defense, is really good for a guy his age. He's 33. I did not realize he was 33. It had somehow escaped my mind, and then they mentioned on the broadcast, and I had to do a kind of a double take to the audio, like, wow, he is 33 and still playing at this level, a level that a lot of 27-year-olds would kill to be at, so.
Yeah, frankly, Yannick Ngakoue would probably love to be playing at his level now.
So, absolutely.
So that certainly is an interesting thing. Van Noy, to get this out of a player like this, the Ravens had a wonderful way to get him that they really waited for him to drop into their price range. He was a guy who apparently they had discussions with during the offseason. He wanted a lot of money, and he probably wanted a multi-year deal as well to get there. The Ravens said, okay, we're going to wait until this stock drops into our price range. And then they got him at, it might've been the vet minimum or it might've been just slightly more with a little bit of bonus money built in last year. And boy, has that deal worked out for them. And I look at a lot of the things that DaCosta has done over the years. And I say he has not been effective at getting veteran wide receivers. I think that's a treadmill you get on with guys there. I think you need to draft them at the cost they are today. Don't sign free agents. And oftentimes I'd say don't sign second contract wide receivers, no matter what, whether they're your own guys or somebody else's, just don't sign. Like the Marquise Brown trade, totally in favor when it occurred. Mm-hmm. But I think the one position, well, one of the positions where he's been extraordinarily good is finding veteran pass rushers. They've searched through the bargain bin and they keep finding these antiques that are great.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to two things. One, I think it's their confidence in their ability to find these edge rushers kind of builds over time. So they're willing to stay patient and wait and wait. And in the meantime, they're working on developing, you know, these young guys. You know, Owe is a great example of a guy who has really just grinded and really come a long way since coming into the league. And I think the other thing is it's the culture and it's the defense that you get to get inserted into. You basically get told, come here and go after the quarterback, because a lot of the other elements of our base defense we already have set. We're not going to ask you to do a ton on early downs, even though, you know, Van Noy did just fine against the run. He is in there to get after the quarterback, and a guy late in his career who's been moved around a lot. He's moved from off the ball to the edge to off. He's moved back and forth, I think, four or five times across different teams. And even just when he was in New England, and now to see him just getting the chance to pin his ear back and go after the QB for a guy who's just not interested in running after running backs and tight ends and coverage anymore. That's another appealing element of the Ravens.
Yeah, he does have to do that still, but he's who's got, I want to say it's like 1400 coverage snaps career. I mean, he's got a tremendous amount of experience at it. I'm going to move on. I'm going to talk about another player, and he's one I don't often talk about, but I think he just had one of his best games as a Raven, and that's Brandon Stevens. Tough game for him in terms of assignment because he was asked to do a lot by himself in this game, but he's targeted 8 times, 4 completions as I scored it for 40 yards and 41 yards, sorry, with only 3 of that coming after the catch. And that's what I really noticed out of two things I really noticed out of Brandon this game. The first is absolutely direct missile to the body coming downhill, particularly in that fourth quarter when they were getting a couple completions in front of him. He had some inbounds tackles, 8 yards, 5 yards that he made that were good. And he did not allow yak in this game. The other thing, which is really terrific, and it's not something we've seen from Brandon Stevens, is he clearly has gone through some sort of transformation literally in the last week to avoid contact in the same way on these coverage where he has to run step for step with the receiver. And this week, totally in the hip pocket, it's almost like he's playing the no touch game or something. He's like, he really won't even give the officials a chance to call a flag by making any sort of contact, even though if you want to turn and find the football, that's often something defensive backs will do and are allowed to do, is touch the receiver to maintain contact so you know where he is, and then look back, use that to be able to look back and find the ball in the air. But Steven, just a remarkable game this week.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that the Cowboys didn't try to move Lamb onto him and kind of pick at that matchup more often. That's something a lot of teams have done with their wide receiver ones against the Ravens over the last couple of years, which is just get them on Stevens and get a lot of targets. He has been close to the most targeted cornerback in the NFL over the last 2.5 years or so. And I think exactly what you just said about his week-to-week improvements is one of the reasons why he's been able to hold down this starting spot so much, is because there is still like clearly elements to his game. I think at the catch point, especially, that he is just not that adept at getting his head around, finding the ball in the air, and making plays on the ball. But I think his answer to that is you might make the catch, but you're not going anywhere. And I think a lot of times his positioning is actually really smart to force tougher throws and force tougher catches where, you know, he doesn't necessarily have the ball skills to always get in and make a play on these balls, but his positioning is going to make it very difficult for the quarterback and the receiver to even make that completion, even if he can't get his hand in there.
You know, one of the nice things about him is he's a very bracketable corner. Okay. Now, you got guys who play fantastic underneath coverage, then you can put a safety over the top of them. You run a big risk throwing a ball to his side of the field if there might be a safety there. Now, obviously, you run that risk anytime in the NFL, but quarterbacks are so interception conscious these days. They're worried about what's the catch radius of their own player, what's the interception radius of the player who's underneath them in coverage or trailing usually, and then how do they need to outthrow that defender to minimize the risk to their own statistics often? It really does come down to that, because that's the money they're going to make in this league a lot of the time. And they're so careful about it. There's a hilarious thing a few years ago, and I forget whether it was Brady Quinn or Colt McCoy. It was one of those two. Was in the game at the end of a game between the Browns and Ravens, a 16-0 game, as I recall. And two times out of three throws, the Quinn or whoever it was at the time, let's just put it this way, the Browns quarterback threw the ball out of bounds. And Gruden was saying, look, I know interceptions are important, but the ball's got to land in the field of play. And I'm like, this is exactly, you know, the right question. And yet it's something that the quarterbacks are too conscious of.
Yeah. And Stevens, I think teams still look at Stevens as the easier cornerback to target on this Ravens defense. And another guy, I think I talked earlier about Ardarius Washington, it might have been the last episode, that emotionality coming out of his play when he's getting targeted, he's making plays in big spots. And I feel like we see that in Stevens too. I think Stevens has this, you got to have the sense after a while that there's a target on your back, that quarterbacks tend to be coming for you. And him rising that challenge consistently, you can kind of feel it building over the course of a game. I felt that way, especially in the Pittsburgh game last year, the Cleveland game, I believe, as well. And to me, that is just an example of his development in Baltimore. His, you know, start and stop at cornerback, the switch to safety, and then there was talk of him playing in the slot before he really just stuck it outside cornerback. And then you think about, okay, this is a fourth-year player. What do we see from him long-term? And you actually see the arrows still trending up. I think that you mentioning his willingness to stay in the hip pockets of receivers instead of getting physical with them, him trusting his athleticism a little bit more, not worrying about slowing the guy down in front of him, and instead trusting that I can keep up with him and that my safety help is over the top as well. I still would love to see him work on just getting his hands in there more and getting his head around a little quicker. I think that's something that Adams was able to manipulate him with last week. But again, I think that for the investment for a third round pick, a guy in his fourth year, that is a really, really good place to be in, especially for a guy who is targeted so much that now quarterbacks probably need to start thinking about looking elsewhere instead of just honing in on Brandon Stevens.
Well, they really did go after him last year. And part of that is how the Ravens are positioning him relative to the safeties and shading towards Darby and whatnot. But Darby was the one who had an unbelievably great year with the Ravens. So scheme wise, I hope this defense can get back to the point where the safeties help the corners as much as they did last year. That would be something really special. But anyway, I called Stevens. Who's your next guy?
Yeah, so I think my next guy has got to be Travis Jones. Just an absolute wrecker in the middle of the field, in the trenches. He I think, again, I really like charting guys' trajectory from when they're out of college and seeing how they develop. And and Travis Jones was tabbed as a potential first round pick at one point, and then slips and slips and on day two until he finally lands in Baltimore. And I remember watching that being, man, they are going to get the best out of him. Anthony Weaver, who's now in Miami, I think did a great job developing over him over those first 2 years, getting him really, really sound fundamentals in the run defense. And now I think we've seen some influence of Chuck Smith with some of these pass rush moves that Jones is starting to pull out. Some of these clubs, the Reggie White-esque hump move that he started to execute with some effectiveness, really throwing his weight around and just beasting some guards that just can't match him physically or with his first step or explosiveness. And so I think it's, again, seeing the year-over-year development of a player who is building on their game and building on their game, and then seeing it kind of explode forth in these first three games has been really, really satisfying.
Yeah, he's a tremendous player. And I always feel like he's so much bigger than what he shows statistically on the field or in the score sheet. He makes plays for other people. But the thing I think is most effective about him as a pass rusher, and why I think he could be used more as a stunt under guy. And he's got all the quickness you need to be a stunt over guy too, by the way, to be the looper. But as a stunt under guy, he's almost unstoppable, because he is a rare player that can go with one arm that's like effectively like about a tree trunk. And we've seen him at the podium, just how large a human he is relative to everyone else around. Of course, larger than reporters who tend to be a smaller lot, but larger than other players too. And just his general girth of all extremities. And he can, one of the things that defensive tackles have to do is try and get a leverage advantage by being longer than their offensive line counterparts, which is why I'm a big fan of arm length on the offensive line. And they do that. One of the main tricks is to go one arm longer than two, meaning you're always, if you're going at somebody from the side, your single arm is much longer than what they can post up against you as with two hands. Travis Jones, if he's sticking a telephone pole into the middle of your chest plate, there is very little you can do if he accurately stabs there. You can try and hand fight him, but he's enormous and he's very difficult to even get off that. So I want to talk about him, and I appreciate you bringing up Travis Jones. I'll bring up the next player now. I want to talk about our Darius Washington, because he had a fabulous game. I think we've talked about it a little bit, but I want to talk about some of the individual plays that Ardarius Washington made. So he came in, he made the tackle on Ferguson. He stripped Lamb for a pass defense. There are other plays where he was in position to make the play, didn't get a chance because the ball was dropped. He was in position for the interception on the ball thrown for Cooks. Cooks politely pulled him down by the collar from behind. Probably should have been flagged for that, by the way, but didn't matter because it was a fourth down turnover and down situation. But he had to do it because it was the only way he was going to deny the interception. Anyway, that just a game full of great plays. And beyond that, one of the ones that doesn't count in the score sheet for any of the reasons is the 2-point conversion stop was a thing of freaking beauty. He bore down on, I think it was Lamb at the 2-yard line. I'm trying to remember who was the guy who stopped at the 1-yard line. Yeah, he separated Lamb from the football. That was the one. And just another great play. So, you know, you're talking about CeeDee Lamb as a large wide receiver, and Ardarius Washington had no point standing up to him basically at the catch point or bearing down on him and making him feel the pain from the receptions he did make.
Yeah, Washington, first of all, that interception, that almost interception, I should say, is the kind of play where Brandon Cooks realized this guy can get up there and pulled him down from the back. And it's just a bummer to see that. It's a smart play by Cooks. It's the right play on the offensive side of the ball. I'm not going to knock him for that, but it's a bummer to see what really would have capped off a big game for Washington, that highlight interception. The biggest play to me that Ardarius Washington made was, I wasn't a super high leverage play. It was, I think, a second and long. I think it was like a second 13, 14 to the first play of the fourth quarter. And he is in coverage over the middle of the field. Lamb is in the slot. Washington is, I think, not quite 10. I think it's probably 7 or 8 yards off the line of scrimmage. And Lamb eats up the space in front of him, runs a deep dig about 10 yards, and Washington just closes on him. I mean, it was blindingly fast to see how quickly Washington transitioned from his drop back into just closing on Lamb. And again, I believe Lamb is 6 foot two. Lamb is a pretty big guy. And Washington's ability to get his arms around Lamb's body and break up that pass was really, really impressive. When you can put a guy like that against Lamb and have him break up a pass like that, the mismatches you're able to create in the other areas of your defense, essentially when you're not letting the offense take advantage of what should be a mismatch for them, the defense is then able to create their own mismatches elsewhere on the field. And that to me was the big, big part of this game from Ardarius Washington, was him stepping up in a big way and Prescott tried to beat him, couldn't. And when he looked elsewhere, there was just too much coverage.
All right. Completely agree on that. You know, one of the things about Ardarius, I'll just finish this one point, is that he only played 30 snaps in this game. So he didn't come into the game until later. I mean, the Cowboys ran 70 snaps. They had Humphrey in the slot to start with. They went away from that and played dime in the second half. And that's when Ardarius really got his chance to come in, play slot, while Humphrey moved back to the outside to replace Wiggins, who was benched after the third penalty. Hamilton was then able to go to the dime spot. Anyway, yeah.
You bring up Nate Wiggins, and Nate Wiggins is exactly the player who I was going to go to there, because I've been a little surprised by how much the Ravens have used him to start the season. I was more expecting him to come on as the season went on and kind of emerged maybe a little bit later as the season, but he's getting a lot of snaps. Obviously got taken out of the game because he was struggling. They were using Lamb to pick on him, which is exactly the right move if you're Dallas. You know, the guy that has speed and can break down a cornerback like Wiggins and really put him on his back foot is Lamb. And they did a good job with that, forced him to come off the field. I want to highlight, though, that punch out, because that is a really great example of playing all the way through a rep. Even, you know, you let a guy get an inside step on you on a slant route, that's going to happen. But he seemed, as soon as that ball was thrown, he seemed to have that plan of, I'm going to come behind. He recognized how far away from him, from Lamb's body, Lamb was holding the ball, and punched that out. I think that is a big plus for a player who hasn't had the easiest go of it the first 3 weeks as a rookie. And I wasn't expecting him to fly through things and immediately be a full-time member of this defense. But him getting taken out was a bit of a rough look for him, and I hope it doesn't knock his confidence too much.
Yeah, it's certainly not going to knock the Ravens' usage of him. At least I don't see it that way. I think it was a take a breath, take the rest of the night off kind of thing. They did end up having to reinsert him for four plays when Ardarius got injured on the pass rush, but then they brought him out again because they were kind of actually low on options at corner at that point. I guess Kadar Holman would have been the next man up. So anyway, I thought first of all, the thing you mentioned about the punch out is something that was very apparent in Wiggins' college tape playing at Clemson, that particularly that North Carolina game. He had a big game where he did give up the 43-yard play to Tez Walker, but he also punched out a ball where he came after a running back from far down the field and punched the ball through the end zone. It's one of those plays that you really look at and go, wow, that is a really pro play. Wiggins remains an outstanding cornerback prospect. He's the only guy in this class, or one of the major guys in this class, let's put it this way, who really matched up the elite athleticism with the elite coverage results already in the NFL. So that's a very big double to get. Devin Witherspoon is the last guy who matched it at the same level. So we're really talking about elite company.
Yeah, and I think with Wiggins, concern with him was kind of twofold. One was the tackling, and we've seen that pop up. We've seen him struggle to get guys to the ground after the catch. And the second was just the adjustment to press. His press tape in college was good, but press against a guy like Lamb is at another level. Mm-hmm. And it felt like once Lamb beat him off the line of scrimmage a couple times, he felt just a little more uncertain, a little more unsteady. And that was the point where Lamb started to break him down on his routes and get some of those yards upfield. I think it was a good learning experience for him, quite frankly, because that's the kind of matchup that the Ravens are going to hope that he takes on his own in future seasons. And it's a glimpse at, one of the best guys in the game at breaking down opposing cornerbacks. And the fact that you were able to frustrate him so much by punching out that ball should be a little feather in your cap in an otherwise unremarkable day.
Yeah. It's not the tape he's going to be showing his grandkids, that not the whole game. Oh, he might have that punch out on a highlights tape, but not.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
The entire thing. Let's talk about Nnamdi Matabike, who had another great game today. You know, every additional data point we're getting from Matabike, and these roll out one at a time, are giving me more confidence that his pyramid is going to look like it should this year in terms of pressures, quarterback hits, and sacks being wider at the base than it was last year. Last year clearly benefited from a lot of cleanup ability on first pressures by other players. Now he's one of the guys who generates those first pressures, and he's helping other guys like Van Noy get sacks. He's missed some sacks in very creative ways so far. He's missed it by penalty, and he's missed a quarterback hit, effectively what was a sack in the end zone of Prescott that was called improperly. I've always thought, by the way, that intentional grounding should just be a sack to the player who caused the intentional grounding. It's a loss of down. It's a loss of yardage. Why not?
I'd be on board for that. I also think that offensive receivers should get some credit when they draw a PI flag, but that's beside the point. I think that Matabike, two things. One, he's starting to get a little bit of a taste of his position as a premier pass rusher. I don't feel like he had to deal with a ton of double teams last year. He is dealing with them more this year already. And I think that, you know, that's going to open up opportunities elsewhere. That's, you know, that's just the nature of the game. When you have a guy who is as dominant as he was last year, teams are going to come in, game plan for him and set him up on some double teams. I think that he is getting, you're right. He should have two more sacks. And I think that he is getting very close on a good amount of others. What I really loved from him this game was Zach Orr flipping him out to the edge a couple of times.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That we have seen that with Chris Jones. The Chiefs have done that in the past. Steve Spagnuolo pulling that lever really when he needs it. It's not something they do often. But throwing, it's funny to call that a changeup when suddenly you're dealing with a 300-pound man coming at you at the same instead of a 260-pound man coming at you. But throwing that changeup at an offensive tackle is really, really an effective way. Terrence Steele had there's one rep in particular I'm thinking about in which Terrence Steele just had no chance at slowing him down. His explosion and strength off the line of scrimmage around the edge was so impressive for a guy who's 300 pounds. And I think some of that varied usage that we could see from him might really help open up his game further.
When you put a guy like that on the edge too, and it's a guy like Matabike, who's a little bit shorter than your average, very long pass rusher, like an Owe or some of the other guys who've been, Carlos Dunlap or something like that, who's a 6'6 guy playing on the edge. What one thing you do is you magnify the impact of rip moves, and particularly against larger monolithic linemen, the 6'8 right tackles we're seeing now in the game. They have a greatly reduced set of options that are effective. First of all, they're not the kind of guys Matabike is not the kind of guy you can easily block 12 to 6. He has too much mass, and he has too much ability to plant at that spot, and he definitely forces you into these really bad situations where you're all of a sudden clotheslining the guy because he's a little bit shorter than you. The guy he reminds me of, and he's a hell of a pass rusher over the lifetime, is Harrison. He was a guy who constantly, because of his size, people were clotheslining him, and I think Matabike, it's going to be good to see him used on the edge occasionally as time goes on. And they don't even have to start him there. They can stunt him. They can loop him to the outside on some of this too. But I love seeing it.
Yeah, we keep going back to it. I think just I'm itching for Orr to kind of break out of his creative shell a little bit with some of these defensive line stunt games and just using all the talent that he has, up front.
All right, let's go to the mailbag if we can. I assume, did you have any other player you want to name? I don't want to cut you off early. Okay, you're good to go. Okay, so in terms of questions, I've got one here, and I want to make sure I get it from the film study mailbag. That's about the offensive line. All right, here's one from Brad McGowan. He says, hey, Ken, how do you feel about Roquan's play this season? Seems like he hasn't been as locked down in the past game so far. Simpson looks pretty good, but it seems opposing teams have been going after Roe a bit. Thoughts? Okay, so let's start that off, and I want to let Nick get his point in here as well. But I'll start that off by saying Simpson's now been taken off the field in a lot of passing situations. So we may or may not see a return to a lot of Simpson in the coming weeks. We'll see how that plays out. I don't think Orr has planted a flag or drawn a line in the sand as far as how he's going to play it in the future, but that's how it worked out this week. Roquan, from that position, is always going to be the weakest coverage link on the field on third down. Of the back seven guys, he's the guy you can most, not necessarily manipulate, but take advantage of the physical mismatch you have against him.
Yeah, and I think with Smith having, you know, he's got the green dot, he's the leader of the defense. I think there is a sense of, you know, he has a lot of responsibilities in that defense. He's a lot of responsibilities every play against the run, against the pass. And I think that that also, you know, does make his job harder. I do think that there are some things he could work on. I'd love to see him execute some robot technique a little bit more often so he can get deeper into some of his drops. Because I feel like a lot of times he's a little bit too shallow and he's too slow getting back. And he backpedals instead of turning and running and using that robot technique. That's something I'd like to see him bring out a little bit more. But I think things are a little bit magnified by that KC game where they really, really did pick on him over the middle. And, you know, the Raiders and the Cowboys tried to and did to with some success, but not nearly as much as the Chiefs. And I think that's partially because it takes, you know, a system, a mind like Reed and Mahomes to be willing to go after Roquan Smith, to isolate that guy of all guys on defense and say, we want to attack him is a pretty ballsy thing to do. And they execute it really well. And I just didn't feel like the Raiders or the Cowboys were nearly as aggressive in trying to work the matchups over the middle of the field that they wanted the same way that the Chiefs did in week one. So I think part of it is matchup dependent. And I do think he could be a little sharper.
It's probably fair, but I also think he's in the position that Mosley was in at the end of his tenure in Baltimore, where he's a hell of a coverage linebacker. And yet, because the secondary around him is so talented, the picking on him is magnified. Mm-hmm. And you really realize how much he's not the worst coverage guy on the field when they're picking on Malik Harrison, because Malik Harrison has much more of a difficulty with his body being what it is now at covering anybody coming off a bunch formation. Roquan has his smarts to do it. It's just kind of a foreign thing for Harrison to do that. I do think a lot of the problem in that first game with Kansas City was the accuracy of Mahomes and the failure to adjust to it defensively. I had Derek Coleman on for that show, and one of the things he said, I think is right on the money, is dropping an outside linebacker to disrupt the bunch would have had real value. And all you need to do is throw the timing of those routes off, and it would have made things very difficult for Mahomes. And you give up a little bit in the pass rush to do it, but you get it back somewhere else.
Yeah, and again, this is the Chiefs. This is Mahomes and Reed we're talking about here. This is an offense that operates really well, really effectively. And so they were able to work the matchups that they wanted, but Orr made the adjustments in the last 2 weeks to make that harder and to have guys move across the formation with receivers to avoid giving that away, playing a little bit more man coverage and having Roquan sit back in a little bit more because just a regular zone drop over the middle. So I'm not super worried about it. I think that we're going to see this defense evolve again. Or very early in Orr's tenure, we're going to see this defense continue to evolve under him.
All right. Really appreciate the questions tonight. I'm sorry we didn't get to quite all of them, but we got to call the show at this point. Nick, thanks very much for coming on. Really appreciate you. One more thing.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing. Someone asked a question about the touchdown problem given up to Jalen Tolbert. And I just want to hit that really quick because I watched that play a couple times. It was a really well-designed play by the Cowboy. They had a pick downfield on Marcus Williams in the end zone, which, truthfully, they don't call offensive pass interference enough in this league as it's defined. Maybe the flag could have gotten thrown there. And that's why Roquan was so upset, because Williams was supposed to rotate to the middle of the field. Yep. Humphrey should have had the corner route, and Roquan would have been exposed over the middle. Although I would point out that's a situation where I would have liked to see robot technique from Roquan. So I just want to throw that in there at the end.
I'll tell you, as I saw it, if you isolate in the basically the middle deep third of the field, Tolbert versus Marcus Williams, he's going to beat him anyway. So even if he'd largely been in the right position, if that ball's at all on target, that's going to be a touchdown anyway. Marcus Williams, fine center fielder, really needs to be looking downhill at the quarterback and reacting to where it's going. He really helps you a ton in brackets. He helps you a ton if there's loose change. And he certainly picked up the fumble in this game in terms of the ground, but also loose change in the air that you're trying to pick off. But it's not his game. And it wasn't Ed Reed's game either, by the way, to cover a guy one-on-one deep.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that that was just the one little point I noticed at the end. I wanted to get in there.
All right. Nick, really appreciate you coming on here. Tell folks where they can find your work.
You can find my work on Brussels Street Report. I write battle plans every week, which is a big preview, very stats driven of what's coming for the Ravens in their next matchup this week. I can be found on Twitter at Nick, N-I-K, knows ball, and hopefully you hop on a chat with me.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. If you have questions, use hashtag film study mailbag. If you want to do the show a favor, you can write a review always. What I'd also appreciate is if you tell an older gentleman about this show, because older gentlemen don't typically use podcasts. Instead, take them to the website, show them how you just play it directly off their laptop or their desktop, and they can listen to it that way. And if they like it enough, maybe they'll learn how to use podcasts in the future. But really appreciate the word of mouth and the loyalty of all the listeners here. Thank you very much. Nick, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, Ken. This was such a blast. I love talking about this defense.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.